The Parents Show on Mix 92.6. Sponsored by Raiden Solicitors. Award-winning specialist family lawyers. See raidensolicitors.co.uk.
Hello and welcome to The Parents Show on Mix 92.6. I'm Lydia El Khoury, and today I'm joined by Jack Simmons, who is from Chat with Jack, but I'm going to let him tell you all about what Chat with Jack actually is. Jack, thanks for joining us on The Parents Show.
No worries at all. Yeah, thank you for having me on.
Great and to meet you.
Yeah, well, one, I dive in a bit, but I'm a 26-year-old counsellor, and for the last year and a half, I've been counselling boys from age 8 to, I say boy, but my oldest is 35. And I trained in traditional therapy with the British Association of Counselling and Psychotherapy. But my sessions with the younger boys tend to be more casual, more activity-based. Kicking a football around, playing table tennis for the in-person ones. And then the online ones are playing online chess or an online game. Or the telephone ones can be going for a walk. So yeah, basically anything but sitting in a room opposite an adult.
Or an intimidating lounger. You know, this is the kind of image people have as therapy. And what got you into therapy? What made you decide to study to be, is it a psychotherapist or?
Yeah. So I trained I've got a degree in counselling in psychotherapy. And I was in marketing before. I'd always wanted to go into therapy. I'd struggled with my own mental health when I was younger. And it wasn't until I saw a therapist who was closer to my own age that I, you know, felt truly understood and able to change. So it was always on the list, but I'd always say, you know, I'll do that in 5-10 years time. But then I thought, actually, there's probably a lot of young people who could deal with or could, you know, be helped by someone younger. So then I retrained for marketing, and yeah, I haven't really looked back. I absolutely love it.
I bet. And it's lovely to hear the kind of the kindness coming over in your voice for this topic. And it's wonderful. I'm sure there are a lot of moms listening now going, thankfully, somebody specialized in boys. And indeed, you're a young person as well. So give us a little bit more detail about the way you approach your sessions.
Yeah. So, it all started from a suggestion from a parent, because after I qualified, to be honest, I assumed it would be more adults that I'd be helping. And I got reached out to by a parent who said, my son's really struggling. He's 13. And would you be up for coming to visit the house and kicking a football around in the garden with him? And then as soon as I did that session, it was almost like a switch went off where I was like, this is so much less awkward for them. And this boy was really opening up and obviously enjoying it. It's active, doing something that he enjoys as well. And then, since then, that's basically been it. I say I do any activity. I've played, a lot of different sports now over the last year and a half. And I think it's just not being in a room opposite someone can really help someone open up, especially of that age. And I see a lot of the boys, I see it's their first time having any sort of counselling support. Then a lot of them have also tried therapists who are older in a more traditional setting, and they have just struggled to engage. I think it's almost after that first session when they realize, you know, it's not actually that serious, it's a very casual chat, that's when they're even more open to it as well.
Brilliant. And actually, you know, the extra message is you don't need to be in a room sitting on a lounger or eyeballing somebody else to talk about your feelings. You can talk about your feelings when you're playing football or chess or table tennis or whatever it is.
Absolutely. I think it's often an easier way to talk about them. And I was saying to my housemate just before this call, but we've known each other since we were 3 years old. And whenever we used to struggle, we'd go for a walk or we'd go to the park and kick a football around. So we were sort of laughing before this call, thinking, I wonder why it's normal to try and send people to a little room where you talk about feelings in quite an awkward setting. So I think it not only is it fun to talk in that setting, but I think it's also lends to deeper conversations more quickly as well.
Yeah, because I remember getting advice when my son was younger. They were saying, you know, if they've got a problem, don't sit looking at them, side by side is always better. But this takes it to another level. Actually, it's fantastic.
I think it's that, and lots of parents do say that. They're like, well, actually, when we play or when I play basketball with him, he's actually quite a lot more open. And I think that's probably a good tip for parents if they are worried about their their son just going for a walk or doing something where you're not face to face, and also giving them the space to open up. It's easy to rush into the fixing mode. And it comes from a place of love, saying, okay, you need to do this and then you'll feel better. But actually often they've got so many authority figures in their life that they just need someone to listen to them and say, you know what, that is actually, yeah, that sounds like a tough day, or that sounds like a tough situation, but I'm going to be here for you and I'll be there for you no matter what. And I think that can make a massive difference to boys.
Brilliant. Oh, really, really good advice. It's hard times for young men in particular. Yeah. There's a lot to navigate with social media and just the so much going on. Can you tell us a little bit about what you're seeing at the moment? What are the struggles? What are the challenges that young men are experiencing at the moment, Jack?
Yeah, I think you're spot on, Lydia, when it comes to the social media side of things. That's something that when maybe I was growing up, I'm 26, but it was, you know, talked about and we used it a bit, but it was more of a communication platform. Whereas now the amount of boys that I see who are, you know, scrolling so much on TikTok, and it affects their attention span as well. It means that your attention is in these short sort of 7-10 second bursts. So that's what I do say to parents. Obviously, you know, it's hard when all of their friends are on these social media platforms. So it might not be completely get rid of them, but just limiting the time can make a massive difference. And yeah, I think this time of year, that January back to school is pretty difficult. I think making sure they're still exercising, getting outside and connecting with friends in real life is quite key as well. Because I think, you know, messaging, it's only sort of replicating it, but it's not the real thing. I think when you actually connect with someone face to face, it can be really good for your mental health.
That is such a great point that I hadn't thought of. Like, messaging is kind of, like you say, is replicating rather than in real life. And I'm so glad you're saying that, because I don't think it can be said enough how important it is to meet up in real life. And the winter, we're in the middle of winter now. The days are short. Yeah. The opportunities are limited. So you've got to be a bit strategic to get yourself or get your kids out to get some fresh air.
You do, for sure. And it makes me think, Lydia, there's a book that I read recently called The Anxious Generation. I think it's by an author called Jonathan Haidt, I think his name is. But the whole premise of it is that, you know, these days at the moment, the current crisis for especially young teens is that children are overprotected in person with in-person play, and they're underprotected online. So maybe when we were growing up, again, I'd probably get my housemate or my mum to phone my housemate's mum and say, right, we'll meet at the park, you know, at 9 a.m. and then we play there until 5 p.m. and then we come back. Whereas now I think that seems like a really scary thing for parents to let their children to do. But it also means that now they're connecting on social media so much more, and they're sort of forgetting that real life play. And the whole premise of this book is that that's what's created, you know, a lot of anxious children, because they don't know what that real world play is. So yeah, that would definitely be my advice, is to try and connect as much as possible in person with each other.
So social media is, you've already given us some great tips, really something to watch out for. And you were saying this time of the year, what about transitions? So say, for example, from primary to secondary or secondary to uni.
Yeah, absolutely.
Are you seeing those? Are they flashpoints?
For sure. I think whether it's transition from term to term, especially also primary to secondary, I think you get a lot of friends and, you know, close group of friends at the time. But then you go to secondary school and suddenly those friends seem to disappear and you have to make new friends. And it's also in a more cliquey environment. A young lad of mine said, you know, at primary school, everyone was friends with each other, whereas now we're all in different groups. I hadn't really considered that before. So I think that's quite tough for boys to get used to and finding their feet there. I think if you feel like you're not in a certain group, then you're sort of thinking, well, where do I fit in? But everyone eventually finds they're like people, but it just can take some time.
Yeah, brilliant. And what would you say to parents who are listening in? So you've alerted us to social media. I mean, I know we know, but I know we also absolutely have to do something about it. So limiting time is important.
Yeah, limiting time. Sorry to interrupt you, but I think also almost being the role model, I think that I often see parents say, oh, it's so tough seeing my child scrolling the whole day. Then I also see parents out and about, maybe at in like a coffee shop and the parents are on their phone replying to messages. So it's like, if you're not replicating that presence and being there with your child, then they're very good at replicating that behavior as well. So I think if you're going to say that to your son, then also try and replicate that behavior. And even things like, maybe it's when you go out for a meal, you're, you know, having dinner at home, just a no phone zone where you're trying to be as present and ask some questions about the day. I think that's, yeah, that's something that I see quite a lot from parents.
That's really helpful. So model it, basically.
Yeah.
Model what you're actually asking your kids to do.
Easier said than done at times.
But really important to be reminded of. So what telltale signs are there that something might not be right with your son? What are little red flags that parents could be looking out for?
Yeah, I think just any sudden change in personality. If you know your son is quite happy-go-lucky and then suddenly they're very pessimistic about everything, or if they're suddenly acting out of anger or just these emotions that you think, well, where's that come from? I think a lot of the times it can be natural and it's part of puberty, which is the difficulty of this. But I think if it's so out of character, then that's probably the time where you've got to think, okay, maybe there is something underneath here and it's going on that either he needs to talk to us about or someone else.
And they're great. Kind of suddenly pessimistic, suddenly angry, anything that's out of character. If you find yourself saying he's not himself.
Exactly. Then that phrase in itself is the key, I think.
Great. And that'll really help parents get a steer on it. It's fantastic how you've shaped the therapy to be active and stuff. But what kind of techniques, what kind of ways do you approach helping young men to solve the issues that they're experiencing?
So I train in traditional person-centered, which is basically giving them that space to unpick it for themselves. And I think it comes back to that directivity of, you can maybe give a young man a lot of solutions, but it's often a short-term fix. I think until they find those solutions for themselves, that's when it's the longer-term fix. So I mix it in with some CBT, some basic, you know, thinking, feeling, coping strategies as well. But I often think until the young boy or the young man even realizes these deep things for themselves, that's when they change properly. And it might be them realizing, you know what, I'm actually being really pessimistic towards my family and I don't mean to be like that. I just had a rough day at school and I'm taking it out on them. And just them expressing that to me, it's amazing how that behavior suddenly just shifts for the next week. They're like, actually, no, that's... And then they'll say to their parents, no, I just had a rough day, actually, rather than internalize it and then take it out on them.
I bet there's so many parents going, oh my God, please help my son. And who have experienced exactly what you're describing there.
Yeah. Yeah, no, exactly. I think that's... And something that I experienced as well. I mean, my parents often joke about, it was like I went to the dark side for a bit where suddenly I was, you know, really happy. And then out of the blue, it was, yeah, suddenly I didn't want to talk to them about anything. And we can laugh about it now, but I know it's really quite a challenging time for them. And yeah, I think, as I said earlier, a lot of it is that tough. You've got a lot of hormones racing through your body at that age as you're going through puberty. But I think if it's so far out of character, that's when you've got to think, okay, maybe he does need some help.
And do you deal with young men who are on the spectrum as well? So who have other kind of issues to deal with as well?
Yeah, I do, for sure. And I think the style of therapy doesn't really change that much for them. I think when they've been diagnosed or you know, lots of professionals have sort of handed them around and said, well, you've got this and this and this. I think, again, they just want that space to be heard. And those diagnoses don't change their reality. So they've still, you know, got to live and go through the week to week, you know, with those diagnoses. So I think giving them that space to offload in those sessions, it's still the same as any other session, really.
So neurodivergence doesn't make any difference to the kind of therapy that you're applying, really.
No.
That's great news as well. So if parents are listening in, you've given us some great tips already. Thanks, Jack. What other things would you say to them to keep an eye out for?
Yeah, good question. I think something that I did see probably in the lead up to Christmas, but it's almost like how relationships with friends change. So it's like if suddenly your son isn't seeing the same group of friends, or they've decided that actually, no, that friend is not for me, for no apparent reason other than like a little comment they made or something like that. That can be a bit of a red flag if suddenly they're isolating themselves from those groups and also from activities that they enjoy doing. So I had a parent recently saying, you know, he absolutely loves doing these Taekwondo classes, but suddenly he's decided that he absolutely hates them and doesn't want to go to them at all. And again, if, you know, if that's happened within the space of a couple of weeks, it can be a bit of a red flag in terms of, well, why is he suddenly isolating from that? That used to be, you know, the one thing he looked forward to in the week. So I think, yeah, change of attitude towards friends and also hobbies.
And would you recommend, I think as a parent, it's often instinctive to listen to them and say, okay, you hate that now, okay, let's stop it. Would you say there's a case for advocating them to stick with things and nudge them in a positive direction rather than give up?
I think so. And even just putting it on pause, whether it's not thinking, okay, that's, we're going to completely cancel that, saying, okay, let's, you know, have a break for a couple of weeks. And then after that, the chances are they're probably like, I actually do miss those things. So yeah, I think being open to it. I think young lads are very good at being rebellious as well. So if they say, oh, you know, or if you say to them, well, we're going to make you go, they'll probably be like, no, I'll do exactly the opposite to what you say to prove a point, which is fair enough. We've all been there. So I think just putting it on pause and saying, okay, well, maybe we can talk about it in a few weeks' time. That can often be the drawback to it.
Fantastic. Thanks, Jack. I've got some great notes from you. I've got a 17-year-old who I haven't had the dropping hobbies or any of that stuff yet, but it's always great to note modeling the phone behavior. I'm afraid you were actually talking about me when you were talking about that, because I really need to up my game. And the red flag is about watching out for pessimism, anger, anything that's out of character. It changes in friendship, changes sudden desire to stop hobbies, and dialing back the phone use. Would you extend that to gaming as well? Do you think it's the same with gaming, or is gaming a little bit better than phone use?
I'd say I have a more positive look on gaming than maybe other therapists, in terms of, I think when you're connecting with people and you're playing online games with your friends, for me that's better than social media, because you're not maybe endlessly, you know, doom scrolling, as they call it. So you're still speaking to someone and connecting with someone. But I suppose if it's, you know, a few hours a night, or it affects a sleep pattern, that's when I'd probably say maybe it's not the healthiest. So I think anything in moderation when it comes to gaming.
Great stuff. Oh, more wise words, Jack. Thanks a million.
There is a tool.
So listen, if you sound like you're the right kind of therapist, and of course there are lots of therapists out there and everybody should pick the therapist that's right for their family and for their children, but if they love the sound of what you're saying, how do they get in touch and how does it work?
Yeah, so I've got a website called chatwithjack.co.uk. So all of my details are on there. And then I'll do an initial free chat with the parent and just get a bit more, you know, about the son and find out more about them, and they can see if I'm a good fit. And it's also worth mentioning, I have a young woman who I trained with who's 27. And often I get parents who come to me and say, I really like this, but do you do anything similar for my daughter? And fortunately, my friend Sophie does a very similar thing for young girls as well. So that's the only other thing to say, if any parents are listening thinking, well, this is great, but do you know anyone for my daughter? Then yeah, my colleague Sophie Hook is very good when it comes to that.
Fantastic. So they could probably get Sophie's contact
through
you.
For sure.
If that sounds like it's right for them. And the website is Chat with Jack.
Yeah, correct.
And very easy to find online, I guess.
Yeah, I think so. I post occasionally on LinkedIn, just tips for parents as well. So I'm Jack Simmons on there. But yeah, Chat with Jack is my main website.
Brilliant, great name. It carries over the kind of essence of what you're trying to deliver.
Yeah, exactly. Just a casual chat. That's all it is.
Lovely. Jack, thanks a million for your time and for all your valuable advice today.
No worries at all. Thank you very much for having me, Lydia.
We'll take a quick break now on The Parents Show on Mix 92.6.
The Parents Show on Mix 92.6. Sponsored by Raiden Solicitors. Award-winning specialist family lawyers. See raidensolicitors.co.uk.
Thanks for staying with us on the Parents Show on Mix 92.6.
I'm Lydia El-Khoury, and tonight I am so excited to be joined by Elisa Karkar, who is no less than our newest presenter on the Parents Show. Hi, Elisa.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
It's a pleasure. And don't think you're going to get away too quickly. So for our listeners, you've joined the Parents Show team and we're so, so delighted that you have. Tell us a little bit about yourself.
Yeah. Hello, everyone. I'm really excited to be embarking on this new journey of being a radio presenter. I never thought I'd be doing that. So my name's Elisa. I live in St. Albans here in Hertfordshire. And I do a few different things. So I'm a Montessori teacher and I run a small business in St. Albans running Montessori groups and parent workshops. And a big passion of mine is actually parent education through a Montessori lens. I changed careers several years ago. I had been working in marketing and recruitment. I decided to change careers to become a Montessori teacher. And that's what I'm doing full time now. And I've opened up my own space in St. Albans called The Nest, where I run my groups from, and other people hire the space to do lovely things with families too. I've got two children of my own. They're older now. They're age 9 and 14. And yeah, live here with those two and my husband, and we've been in St. Albans for 6 and a bit years now. And yeah, just really excited to be extending, I guess, the work that I'm already doing, working with families and advising families and doing this through the medium of radio.
Lovely, lovely. Yeah. I've lots and lots of questions for you, Elisa. So let's start at the beginning. Why St. Albans? What brought you to our neck of the woods?
Well, previously we had moved over to Sydney in Australia. So we had been living in London, and then I got a job opportunity to go and live in Sydney. So we all up sticks and moved to Sydney, and we were there for 5 years. And then we eventually decided to come home and went back to London and suddenly decided we'd outgrown London after a sort of slightly calmer, maybe more idyllic lifestyle in Sydney near the beaches. It didn't feel quite right anymore with two little ones. So we did that whole thing that you do. You get the map out and the husband's got the job in London and you're thinking, well, he needs to be able to commute to London, but we want somewhere a bit more quieter and a bit more idyllic. And St. Albans was one of those, you know, the options. And then that's the one we went for. So that's what brought us here.
There was no local anchor or something like that. It was just logistics.
Yeah. I mean, we did have one friend. We had friends in all the towns, Harpenden, Berkhamsted, St. Albans, you know, all the usual suspects. And so we did have some friends here, one set of friends. And they showed us around and showed us what their life was like compared to, you know, what ours was like in London and what it had been in Sydney. And it felt like it sort of ticked all the boxes. So, yeah, it's been good. It's got the good schools and the green spaces and a nice town and lots going on. Independent cinema was very important, actually.
Aha. Yeah. Oh, good. Oh, we have that in spades. Yes. Here, don't we? We're yes. Very, very lucky. Great. So you came and then tell us how the Montessori evolved, and tell us, for those listeners who don't really kind of get the ins and outs of Montessori versus other kinds of childcare settings, what it involves.
Yeah, definitely. Well, I came to it like most people do when I was looking for a nursery. This was over in Sydney in Australia. And there are more there's more variation in education choices over there really than here in the UK. So there were quite a few Montessoris and other styles of nurseries. And we really loved the nursery when we went to have a look around. And we only went there because we knew someone who went there, not because we particularly knew anything about Montessori. But then we started to attend the parenting talks at the nursery and understood actually this not only is a nursery solution, it can really help us in our parenting. And we were over there on the other side of the world from our family with a two-year-old, a very strong-willed two-year-old, really not knowing what to do. Like, they don't come with a manual, do they, children? We were getting ourselves tied in all sorts of knots with, you know, inconsistent limits and boundaries. And we didn't, honestly, it was a very confusing time. And I just found the guidance I got from the Montessori teachers so helpful and clear. And I just got more and more into it. And so when my son was born, I decided to change careers and become a Montessori teacher. And I took 2 years to do that training. So I actually did two courses at the same time, which was totally bonkers to do on the other side of the world without any support. But there we go. Oh, that's what dear. I did. and a baby. So he was 5 months old when I started studying. But then when I finished, it wasn't long after that that we came back to the UK. And it wasn't long after that we moved to St. Albans and lockdown happened. So there was a little bit of a while before I could get going with it. When my son went to school here in St. Albans, I decided to set this business up. So back in 2021, I started running groups out of Fleetfield Community Centre, just opposite Morrison's in St. Albans. I just hired the room, you know, by the hour and did my groups there for about four and a half years until about a year ago, when I then had a bit of a break and decided to sort of have a bit of a rethink about what I wanted to do. Because I was doing these groups whilst also working full time in a university. So it was all quite busy. And I decided actually I really wanted to follow my passion. So back in June, I think it was in 2025, just last year, I quit that full time, very sensible, safe job and decided to go full time with the Montessori. And I started leasing my own premises in September. And so it's all pretty fresh and new, actually, this whole following my passion full time and taking on this kind of quite considerable financial risk of, you know, leasing a property in St. Albans. We know how expensive it can be to do that here, but I'm absolutely loving it. Like, and I've got lots of families who've stayed with me or come back with their second or their third children. And that's just lovely to see. Like, I love that time with the parents as much as with the children.
Gosh, that's amazing. Yeah, you definitely love to spin a few plates at the same time, Elisa. I think that's probably one of the qualities of parents' show presenters. It seems like people who come to present on the parents' show tend to be very, very able to spin a few plates at the same time. But what a great thing to listen to your heart and follow your dreams and do what you want to do. It sounds really fantastic. So you, Fleetfield Community Centre, and where are you based now? Where, and
so
tell us a little bit about
Drive. Yeah, so I the unit that I rent out used to be a photography studio, and it's on Central Drive, which is kind of in between Fleetfield and Oaklands area. So it's a really residential road, but it's got a little parade of shops on it. So there's a coffee shop, there's MySpace, and there's a convenience store and a hairdresser's. And I was walking past it one day and I saw that it was up for lease. And I thought, oh, I mean, it looked nothing like what it does now. I thought maybe I sort of could see what the potential was if you opened it all up. And it is perfect. It's just a lovely space. It's essentially the size of one good sized classroom. And there's a little bathroom at the back and a little kind of kitchenette. And that's essentially a Montessori playroom. But I've been renting the space out also to other lovely businesses who also support children and families and parents. And I kind of clear the space a bit for them to use it when I'm not using it. So otherwise it's just sat dormant because I can't run classes, you know, all day, every day.
Yeah, of course. Well, it's brilliant to have the flexibility.
It's amazing.
Of the space. And I know the photography. I think it was called Arif Gardner.
Arif Gardner,
or something.
Yeah, that's right. And he's still there. He's just round the back. And actually, wow, he's very handy. I've got him on WhatsApp he was there for a long time. You know, it was his space. And I've got him there often texting him saying, how does this thing work? But yeah, everyone's been really lovely, actually. Just the got the coffee shop next door being central and the hairdresser and the convenience store and just people on the street, even though it's a residential area. And, you know, sometimes that can come with problems because people have particular views on what goes on in their street, as do I. But everyone's been so supportive and positive. It is a lovely thing. I'm bringing, you know, little children in and their parents and we're supporting them. And it has got just a lovely positive vibe, the whole thing.
I know exactly where you are. And I also know that coffee shop. Oh, my goodness. What's the name of it again?
Bean Central.
Bean Central. Yeah. I've been in there and they do lovely cakes as well. Yes. So you've kind of got a great combo for you've got setting for kids and a coffee shop nearby, like next door. Couldn't ask for more than that.
Free parking outside. So these are, you know, obviously when I'm telling people about the groups and tell them all about the lovely Montessori environment, but they're very keen to know about the free parking and the coffee shop next door as well.
And tell us about the kind of the spirit of your setting, The Nest. What is it that you're trying to bring across and the spirit of Montessori, really? Yeah. Because it is different.
Yeah, it is different. So Montessori itself is a philosophy, whether that's educational, parenting, or just life, how to live. It's a very, child-centered approach and child-led approach. It's very nurturing and calm, and kind of the aesthetics of it are very beautiful and minimal. And really what we're understanding as parents or educators is that our children are born with everything they need to develop in life. What they need from us is just that loving environment, a safe space with a few stimuli, a few toys here and there, and really just our connection and our response. They don't need entertainment. Our children do not need to be entertained. This world is entertaining enough, and they have these wonderful sponge-like absorbent minds that are just taking in everything around them. And so really it's just providing that lovely environment and that human environment and that physical environment, and then letting them be free, letting them follow, we follow their lead, encouraging them to be independent and figure things out for themselves and, take little risks and feel free to explore and not afraid of making mistakes. So, in traditional education is generally, quite adult led, and kind of you'd sort of directing a big group of children at the same time on the same topic, for example, whereas in a Montessori environment, the children are following their own interests and you as the adult is kind of dropping in, and potentially you might offer a little bit of support where they're stuck or a little bit of extension, but you're very much, it's lots and lots of observation to understand what their interests are and what their developmental needs are at that point. And whilst we're doing this, particularly in my groups, I'm also supporting the parents to understand this too, so that they're going away with skills that they can use at home. I'm also just in the process of developing a different side of my business, which is really exciting. So at the moment in the Nest, I run the Montessori groups, and they're kind of weekly groups. So you sort of sign up for that and you come each week like you would any other baby, toddler or preschool group. But I'm also developing some one-to-one family support services as well. So actually I've been working with a client this week, just to really support them on, it's such a busy, overwhelming time of your life when you've got little ones. And usually, you might be juggling work, keeping on top of the household somehow, trying to meet the needs of your individual children and, perhaps meet some of your needs if you can too. So there's just a lot going on. And I think you can kind of get quite stuck in a rut and get quite confused with things and get into patterns that are not helpful, you as a family. And so from my experience, Montessori has helped so much. Whenever I've got stuck with things, I could always go back to those kind of principles of being child-led and observation and encouraging independence, which reduces frustration. And so kind of supporting families. So I am going to be doing this, one-to-one support, and I've absolutely loved it so far, just working with an individual family, learning about their routines and the kind of how their house is working and what's working well and where the tricky bits are, and then using my Montessori like experience and my Montessori knowledge to help them come up with some strategies just to make family life run a little bit smoother. And that's really all we want, isn't it?
Absolutely. I couldn't agree more. And I really love what you're saying about encouraging children to be independent, because I think there's a danger with all of us parents that we just maybe meddle a little bit too much, and particularly with toddlers, thinking that there's no way they're going to be able to put on this coat all by themselves, or they'll never learn to tie their shoes. I might as well just do it for them until they're 7 and a half, it's kind of crazy stuff. But it's so important for them to learn those.
They're so capable, they're usually way more capable than we realize, because we love them so much and we want to make their life easy. We don't want them to struggle like we may have done. And we want to make our life easy as well. So we just end up generally doing too much of them because of that. So it's all coming from the right place. But what we do by kind of doing too much for them is we don't give them the opportunity to figure things out for themselves, to learn from their mistakes, because we know that we learn more from our mistakes than, not. And the really at the heart of all of this, when you get the opportunity to do something for yourself, maybe just because that environment's been set up so you can access that activity, or you can have been shown how to put your coat on independently, or that broom is just the right size for your hands. When you set that space up and you give time, then the children will just, that independence will just naturally happen if you kind of, you know, step back and allow it to. And what children can then achieve is they have this wonderful sense of confidence because they did it themselves. They did it all by themselves. And that confidence, that just grows self-esteem within children, which grows strong character. And all of us want our children to grow up to be confident, to know what they want and not be afraid to go after it, to be in social harmony with their environment, to be kind. And really, that's, it's Montessori, Maria Montessori, and that's where this came from. This was a person, Maria Montessori, developed this philosophy. She was a scientist and she observed children for hours and hours and hours to understand this and then to kind of start to develop these strategies and ways of working with children as parents or educators. And, you know, she sort of realized all this. She never wanted, I don't think she ever meant it to be called Montessori. She called it an aid to life. Like really just education for life, to live a good life, a good happy life and be a good person and, you know, enjoy yourself and be content. And really everything that we're doing in terms of that freedom and the independence and the activities that require concentration and development of skills, that's what we're trying to encourage. Just that, yeah, that confidence, that self-esteem, that strong willpower.
Absolutely. And we what we're hearing about children later in life who don't get to fail, make mistakes, learn from their mistakes or learn through their own way of achieving it, is that they become very anxious about making mistakes and strive more for perfectionism, which is something nobody should ever be striving for. And it is leading to, even though, as you say, it comes from the best of intentions, it is leading to more anxious young people because they're afraid to fail. They haven't been given the opportunity to mess up on their own because kind parents are trying to spare them and save them from everything. But it's actually very counterproductive. It does the opposite of what the kindness is intended to do, where you have children who are going away to university and don't know how to cook, don't know how to clean, don't know how to change their bed or wash their sheets or anything like that. You know, it's like the stories are getting scarier, aren't they, about overhelping your children.
And as a parent, you don't know until you know, right? And I think that's why I'm so passionate about the parent education side of things, because there's so many things that I've learned along the way that somebody's taught me that I'm like, oh, that makes so much sense. I wish I'd known that. Some of it's just so obvious, but it just hadn't been framed in that way. And so, yeah, I find like in groups, and I'm sure I'll get more of it with the one-to-one support, just lots of like, oh, okay, yeah. I see that makes sense. It's so obvious when you know, but when you don't know, you don't know. And you're just, I think particularly now I feel I see this more and more as well. So many families just feel like we're in survival mode. We've got two working parents. The kids are at school. There's breakfast club. There's after school. Then we've got to somehow keep on top of the house and the cooking and you get the weekend and everyone's tired. But then there's a load of other sort of extracurricular activities. So the time and the space to allow that independence and the freedom and the mistakes gets quite squashed. And so you do whatever is just quickest and most efficient. So it's completely understandable that's, you know, the way it has gone and is continuing to go. But I think, there are ways and means that you can fit it in, but it does require, I suppose, a little bit of a shift in your mentality and your approach and how you're looking at the situation.
Yeah, and I'm as guilty, if not more guilty. I totally overextended my helping, when particularly with my son, because he was older, but feeding him way too long, way too long. And it's not that he didn't develop his fine motor skills. I don't think that was it. It was just ridiculous. And it was speed, it was efficiency, where I was just like, this will only take me 5 minutes. Yeah. You know,
And then I know his head, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. But, yeah.
We're guilty of it too, even though I've got all this training. Like, I've been, you know, working in this space and Montessori parenting for over a decade, but we still do it. And we catch ourselves and like, what are we doing? And you realize, right, we need a bit of a rethink, a bit of a reset. So we're constantly, as parents, and the children are constantly developing and things are changing, the circumstances are changing. You know, I was working full time and juggling this. Now I'm not. So I have pockets of space where I can, right, I need to fix that. You know, there's constant resetting of your parenting.
100%. Like my challenge, my kids are older than yours. They're like 15 and 17 now. And my big challenge is not letting them off the hook with chores. This is because it's so much easier not to listen to the moaning, not to listen to the complaining, and it taking 10 times longer than it would if you did it. But I'm really trying to hang in there and stand my ground and stay true to asking them to do chores. Yeah. And as it is, it's like nothing compared to the chores I had when I was a kid, but still,
you know. I mean, it's hard when you're facing the wrath of a teenager. I do have one of those too. And I was like, oh, I'm scared.
Absolutely. So it's brilliant to hear about your vision and your dream and how you've realized them, Elisa. It's so nice. And I know you'll bring so much of your experience into the parents show. It's really exciting to have you on board because you really know what you're talking about. I'm just winging it all the time.
Oh, I don't think so. I'm looking to you as my, you know, hero on this and how to manage it all. It's a new thing. I had started with my Instagram account, at Love Montessori. I'd started doing lives with, you know, people and interviewing them. And I really, you know, was starting to quite enjoy it. And it was only then that I saw the advert for the co-host opportunity. I thought, well, I'm kind of doing it in a different way anyway. So let's see how this goes and let's see how I go.
Brilliant. And I'm so glad you did. And in fact, I think your Instagram lives are a lot braver than radio because at least we don't have to dress up for radio. Nobody can see that I'm slouching around in my sitting room. But it's fantastic. So we're looking forward to lots of exciting shows and topics, Elisa, and wonderful to meet you properly today. And thanks for joining the team.
Yeah, thank you so much. I'm really excited to get started.
All the best.
Thank you.
The Parents Show on Mix 92.6, sponsored by Raiden Solicitors, award-winning specialist family lawyers. See raidensolicitors.co.uk.